Good evening, everybody. I thought for our motivation tonight that I would read you something that somebody who listens to the teachings, who lives in another place, sent in. He sent in two, quote, Joe Blow comments. One we'll get to a little bit further on, but one I thought was very good for the motivation. So he said, the volitional formations rummaged around and his volitional factors, you know, fourth aggregate, rummaged around and recalled John Lennon wrote two verses on this, on grasping at the eye, in Let It Be. Okay, so, I can't remember the melody. We'll have to... I mean, I remember the Let It Be part. Yeah, as soon as I'm sure it'll come back, you know, imprinted in there. But the lyrics are, all through the day, I, me, mine, I, me, mine, I, me, mine. Do you remember that from Let It Be?
That's from the album Let It Be. The song is I, me, mine.
Oh, the song is I, me, mine. And the album is Let It Be. Okay. Okay, so we have the root text and commentary here. I don't want to credit it to the wrong sutra. I will get ostracized for that. Okay, so it's from all through the day, I me mine, I me mine, I me mine. All through the night, I me mine, I me mine, I me mine. Now they're frightened of leaving it. Everyone's weaving it, coming on strong all the time, all through the day, I, me, mine. All I can hear, I, me, mine, I, me, mine, I, me, mine. Even those tears, I, me, mine, I, me, mine, I, me, mine. No one's frightened of playing it, everyone's saying it, flowing more freely than wine. All through your life, I, me, mine. I think he understood something. Mm-hmm. I don't remember those lyrics, though.
George Harrison.
Yeah, okay. We'll have to... George Harrison had Indian masters.
They were influenced by the Indian Hindus, but George Harrison...
Ah, okay. Well, there we are, isn't it? No one's frightened of playing it. Everyone's saying it, flowing more freely than wine, all through your life. I, me, mine. Yeah? And it's so entrenched that, as he said, you know, nobody's frightened of playing it. Everyone's saying it. It's totally normal, totally natural. Everybody expects you to be selfish. And in fact, our media nowadays is really encouraging you to be selfish, you know, and because it sells more, doesn't it? And it's just going down for this is normal. And yet what effect does it have on our world? I mean, you look at the U.S. Congress, everybody's thinking, I, me, mine, aren't they? You know, so there's no idea of compromising. I heard somebody say that politics isn't about getting the majority smashing the minority. It's about both sides coming up with a compromise that they could live with. Yeah, which makes sense the way our government is organized. Let's come up with a compromise we can live with. No. No, I don't want a compromise. I want it all my way. I, me, mine. Yeah, it's got to be all my way. And so this comes up, you know, I mean, in the government, in our workplaces, in a monastery, in... You know, everywhere, you know. It's my way or the highway. More and more it is, you know. And that's called sticking up for yourself. Being selfish is now promoted as just sticking up for yourself. Yeah. And I think being selfish and sticking up for yourself are quite different, actually. But now they're getting really blended. So whenever you don't get your way, you've got to stick up for yourself. So you've got to push. Yeah. And if I don't get my way, well, I'm going to let you all know that I'm unhappy about it. Yeah? So we pout, we get angry, we do whatever. Yeah? So no idea of like cooperating with other people to fulfill everybody's needs as much as possible. No idea of compromising. No idea of even, God forbid, giving up a little bit of what we want so that somebody else can be happy. Oh, don't even think of that. You know, that's sacrilege. And according to modern America, you know, don't even think of giving up having your own way for somebody else's benefit. Or think of, you know, going one step out of your way to do something for somebody else. Unless, of course, you're going to get rewarded for it in some way or another. Then don't. So we seem to, I don't know, as a society, be getting more and more self-focused. I don't know. Do people feel this? I see a difference since when I was little. I mean, when I was little, they used to talk about, you know, sharing your toys and, you know, compromising and that kind of stuff and not getting your own way. It was like, you know, you had to be polite when you were a kid. That one, I don't know.
I think a lot of the Facebook just telling the whole world about every moment of your day what you have.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Telling
technology is coming.
Yeah, on social media, everything you do and think as if the whole world is really interested in that.
Apparently the whole world is.
Well, I don't know. I don't get it. But anyway, you know, I mean, here we are, at least some group of people, plus people who are listening in and watching this later, you know, who are trying to question this and saying, okay, I see my instincts inside, always my, me, mine. Yeah? But I want to try and overcome that because I can see, you know, when I study karma and the law of cause and effect, the karmic law of cause and effect, that the more I think about myself and just push my own agenda, the more I actually wind up creating negative karma out of attachment, anger, jealousy, pride, laziness, you know. So I, me, mine actually isn't my best friend. You know, it's not that following that is going to make me happy. It's actually, if I look closely and understand about karma, that thought is my worst enemy. Because if you look, you know, why do we have fights with other people?
Yeah. I feel like, it's like even where I work, it's strength equals competition in a way. Like people equate that, and just like when the first day when we were sharing the first time, I was saying that there weren't that many talks on equanimity. Mm-hmm. Well, I was also just now thinking that there's not that many talks on altruism, you know? I haven't heard that word in such a long time. Mm-hmm. Like, I rarely ever hear of it, now that I think about it.
Wow. You mean in your workplace? Or
just
where?
Just in general.
Just in general?
In life?
Common?
In my everyday life.
In your everyday life?
Very rare.
Yeah. Yeah, that you don't hear about equanimity and you don't hear about altruism.
I think, yeah, the last time I heard that word was
yeah.
So,
yeah.
And it's only through the Dharma that I've heard.
Yeah, yeah. So I think that's one of the reasons why it's important to listen to the Dharma, so that we don't forget about those kinds of things. Yeah. And that, so that we make a real concerted effort to develop them in our own minds.
Common perception is that it's giving up something.
If
you're altruistic, you're giving up something,
which is simply... Yeah, if you're altruistic, you're giving up something. Oh, who wants to do that? I'll give you my old underwear. That's all. That's all I'm going to give up. You know, or something that's been sitting in the garage that the mice have been living in for the last 15 years. I'll give that up.
But just put a word in here that I have this disagreement with my teacher at home as well. I think that people are for the most part still good mm-hmm. and kind-hearted. And I know my daughter is teaching her children to share their toys mm-hmm. and to be kind to others. And I think, a lot of the media is East Coast and West Coast. And I think the middle of the country is still very... oriented toward those same kinds of mm-hmm. traits that we're focusing on.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you say that middle of the media is East Coast and West Coast. Actually, everybody across the country hears it. And there are a lot of people who really adhere to the old values. But then even amongst those people, they hold those values for the people who are like them. Not for the people who aren't like them.
Well, I agree with you there, but I don't think that's changed since you and I were children.
No, I don't think that has either. Yeah, I don't think that's changed at all. I went once to with a friend of mine who was the chaplain in Colorado Springs at the Air Force Academy. She was the Buddhist chaplain there. And I went one time with her because there was a Buddhist group. And to talk to the cadets, because I was so curious how these guys were thinking. And it was amazing. I mean, what they were saying, in one way, was very Buddhist. It was like, I want to help people. Yeah? And I want to help people. I don't want to worry about having income, being in the military service. I can help people. The government pays my way. I don't need to worry about room and board. Yeah, and it's organized, so that there's a structure and a goal, and where people are being mistreated, I can go in and do something. And many of the cadets were really talking, kind of with an attitude of compassion for people. And I left asking myself the question, what's the difference between them and what monastics are trying to do? Or, because monastics, your room and board is also taken care of, so you can concentrate fully on your practice, and that's what these guys were saying. But aside from that, this whole wish to help people, what's the difference between what the military is doing and these guys, their reason for enlisting, and what Buddhists are doing, or trying to do? And I thought, the real key is equanimity. Mm-hmm. Yeah? Because if you want to help, but the field of your help is everybody equally, then it's going to come out much differently than if you want to help, but the field of your help is one group. And because then that makes it so that you favor this group and you're against that group. So you may have compassion and a good intention, but it often can come out in, it comes out in bias, and then the mind very easily turns to anger, because to help one side, you have to hate the other side. So it was just, something for me to really think about. And I must say it did change my view of cadets and, why people are joining. Yeah? Because there's some good intention in there, but they've never been exposed to the idea of helping without bias and of helping without force. Yeah? Their idea of helping was you've got to use force against the bad guys. Whereas for me, you know, ever since I was a kid, it's like violence is not an appropriate way to solve a conflict. You know, I mean, that's what children do. Yeah, and that's what our parents taught us not to do. At least that's what my parents taught. I mean, no, some parents teach, you know, they hit you, hit them back. But I wasn't taught that. And so, you know, to me it's like, well, that's not a viable way to solve a conflict. You know, because it just doesn't work. Anyway, this is by way of motivation to get us to think of maybe trying to do something about I, me, mine. Yeah? And how it manifests, both in the self-centered thought, thinking I'm more important, my happiness is more important, I've got to be comfortable at all costs, I've got to get my way at all costs, I've got to win at all costs, I've got to have the last word at all costs, I've got to be right, you know, I've got to be better than everybody else, I've got to have everything I want. So that self-centered thought, yeah? And then the self-grasping ignorance, that is just apprehending this solid me that's like really there, you know, there's a real me, independent me that exists here. Yeah? And that kind of self-grasping is the root of all the afflictions that we have. Okay? So to work against those two attitudes. So that's what Aryadeva is trying to teach us in the 400 stanzas. Yeah. So he's teaching us with compassion. But of course, you know, often when somebody tells us something with compassion, our self-centered mind doesn't like it at all. You know? And so sometimes, you know, when we hear the Buddha's teaching, you know, what do you mean, give up my way? You know, what do you mean? You know, yeah, we just don't like that at all. Especially like, do it the same way as everybody else. You know, like when you're a monastic, one of the things when you're doing certain monastic events is everybody has to do the same thing at the same time. If everybody's sitting, you have to sit. If everybody's bowing, you have to bow. If everybody's standing, you have to stand, you know. You can't do something different than what other people are doing. Otherwise, the whole Sangha action that you're doing is invalid. What do you mean I have to do what everybody else is doing when they're doing it? Yeah? If I feel like standing when they're sitting, I'm just going to stand. You know? Yeah? And there's, you know, and if you put any kind of barrier where you can't see other people in the room, then again, that Sangha event is canceled. You know, it's not valid. What do you mean I can't put a screen here if that light's too bright? I'm going to do that. Yeah, right here, next to me, you can have the light. Yeah. So, you know, this mind. And then you come in the Sangha, you got to dress like everybody else. Yeah, you got to cut your hair when it gets too long. If you don't, you know, oh, by the way, I've always been wanting to get barrettes. And then just leave somebody a barrette by their place in the table, you know. A little hint sometimes. Yeah? So it's like, what do you mean I have to cut my hair? It's getting too long. Yeah. What do you mean I can't wear these kind of shoes? What do you mean? No. I can do what I want. I like this color maroon, not that color maroon. I don't like stuff that's scratchy and old. I want nice, soft stuff. Yeah, and so all the time, you know, you're just getting hit with it. You live at the Abbey, you know, and it's like breakfast is at this time, lunch is at this time, medicine meal is at this time. Well, I don't like that. Yeah, I want to eat 15 minutes later. You want to eat 15 minutes earlier. So we're going to fight. work up our appetite. Yeah? So all the time we're just, you know, kind of bumping into, you know, I, me, mind, and how I think things should be and how I want them to be and everything like this. Yeah. It's true, isn't it? Are you experiencing a little bit of living with us for this time? Are you experiencing some of that? Yeah. Yeah. What do you mean I have to make my bed? You know? I don't want anybody coming and looking in my room. Too bad. Your room is not your room. Your room belongs to the community. So you're using the community room, which means you can't leave your junk all over the place, and it means you have to make your bed.
It's funny how we get territorial really quickly.
Oh, very, very quickly. Yeah.
I was thinking about that today when we were resting. This is my bed.
Yeah. You know, first it's my room, and then you get even more, okay, well, I've got to share it with some other people. But this is my bed. And that's my suitcase. So I can leave my stuff on my bed and my suitcase and the 2 feet in front of both of them. And it shouldn't interfere with you. But it's not our room, and it's not our bed. Yeah? It belongs to the community, and so we have community standards of how things are kept.
Not mine.
Hmm?
Not mine. Not my bed.
Not your bed? But then we go, oh, it's not my bed, so then I won't make it. Yeah, that's why I don't make my bed, because it's not mine. It belongs to the community, so they should make it. Yeah. But, you know, I mean, this is all part of our practice, isn't it? Yeah? So all the time we're, you know, bumping into things. Yeah. Why isn't this path plowed? Somebody should have shoveled this path. You know, I'm stumbling around in the snow. What are all those people doing right now? Yeah, well, I'm sitting here trying to walk. They could have shoveled the path already before, so that it's clear when I walk here.
Listen, I shoveled that path 4 times today.
Well, I did it twice. And then it keeps snowing. Yeah?
We've been praying for it for many years.
Yes, and we've been praying for it. Thank goodness, and we want it to keep snowing. We don't want it to stop. Yeah. Or then it's like, yeah, I shoveled the path and nobody thanked me. Yeah, don't they all know that I shoveled the path? And then look, it snowed again and there's more stuff in it. After all my hard labor. Yeah. Well, let me tell you, it didn't go to waste because I tried to take a shortcut today in an area where nobody had plowed the path. I turned around after 2 steps. The snow was so deep. Yeah, so even the snow comes back, it's still better. Yeah, and believe me, we really want the snow, so it's quite a blessing. But, you know, just how, okay, well, if I'm going to strain myself to wash these dishes or shovel this path or, you know, do something, I at least want some recognition. You know, at least they should say thank you. You know, put my name on the board up there, on the whiteboard. So and so shoveled the path 4 times. How many times did you shovel it? Guilt, 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 guilt. So it's so funny the way our mind works, you know. Yeah. Or it's like, this food, you know, doesn't have enough salt. This food is too salty. Yeah. I think it's okay to complain when it has too much salt. Because you can always add more. But you can't get rid of the salt once it's there. That's because I don't like too much salt. Yeah, so my way's right, isn't it? And I'm going to let you know if it's too salty. Also, I'm right, because salt is not good for your diet. And it's going to give you high blood pressure. So you just pick up your bowl without even tasting it? With a salt shaker? 1 minute later? Okay! High blood pressure. And then somebody says to you with compassion, maybe don't eat so much salt. Who are you talking to? You should eat more salt. Anyway, you can tell how my meditations are going. Okay, maybe I better teach the text. Okay, so we kind of started on 184 last time. I don't think we finished completely, did we? Okay, so, and 184 is about giving up fear of emptiness. So, Joe Blow, our precious Joe Blow, says, if all things are empty, there are many unwanted consequences, since by denying the existence of objects, actions, and agents, even liberation will not exist. So his problem is that he thinks emptiness means total non-existence. Okay. So Aryadeva says, thinking nothing exists, what's the use? You may be afraid. But if actions did exist inherently, this doctrine would not be a prevention. Okay. So this is the thing that many people, if they don't understand emptiness correctly, they go to the extreme of nihilism. Because they think, you know, things have got to be inherently existent. If they aren't, then they don't exist at all. So they have no way of positing conventional existence that is similar to illusion. Instead, they just go all the way to things don't exist at all. And if nothing exists at all, then why practice? Because there's no liberation. You can't attain it. So, you know, why practice? Why keep good ethical conduct? Because nothing exists. So just go out and enjoy yourself, and it's all fine as long as you don't get caught. That's the slogan of my generation. Okay? And, and then it's all okay. Yeah? But that's the problem, you know, is that it's not that nothing exists. Yeah, things do exist. They just don't exist inherently in the way they appear to us to. Okay? If things did exist inherently the way they appeared, then there would be no way to actually eliminate the afflictions, and then we would really be in trouble. Because inherent existence, I'll go through this, but again, we did it last week, but it's very helpful to really think about this and remember it. Inherent existence is synonymous with independent existence. Okay? Independent existence means that things do not depend on anything else. Okay? They exist all by themselves. They don't depend on causes and conditions. They don't depend on parts. They don't depend on being conceived and labeled. They don't exist in relationship to anything else. They just have their own inherent, independent identity. And that's the way things appear to us. You know, when we look at things, things look like they all have their own independent identity. I mean, when I look at you, I don't think, oh, you're a caused phenomena and you only exist because the causes for you exist. I look and there's a real person there. When I look at you, I don't think, oh, there's a body, but, you know, that started out, you know, this big in the womb and then, you know, was a zygote and all those different stages and then a child and this and, you know, going on and then decomposing again. Yeah. No, I don't see that. I just see body there. Yeah. So something that is independent like that doesn't depend on anything else. So independent and dependent are totally contradictory. Okay? If it's independent, it can't be dependent. If it's dependent, it can't be independent. Right? Okay. But then when we look at things, are they independent? Or do they exist dependent on other things? Yeah. So when we look, it's like, well, no, things exist dependent on causes, don't they? Yeah. The lettuce grows because there were lettuce seeds. And they depend on conditions because of the farmer who planted them and harvested them and, you know, everything else. The lettuce didn't just appear there out of nowhere. It depends on causes and conditions. Yeah. And when I look at the lettuce, it isn't like the lettuce is one solid thing. It's made up of parts. There's all these different leaves. Right? You call it a leaf of lettuce, don't you? Yeah. So there's a leaf, all these different leaves on the lettuce. So it actually has many parts. And then it's called lettuce because when you put the parts together, yeah, we've all kind of agreed that that's a sound that we use to discuss that thing. That's a name, you know. We put those parts together and we can conceive of an object and we agree on a name to put on. That's it. So where's this independent thing that is lettuce that doesn't depend on anything else? It isn't. Depends on causes and conditions, depends on parts, depends on being conceived of and given a label. Okay, so it's dependent. So if it's dependent, yeah, then it can't be independent. You getting what I'm saying? Yeah. So, you know, it isn't that everything's independent, and if it isn't independent, then nothing exists. It's like, no, it's not independent. It's dependent, and it exists depending on other factors. Okay? But it's kind of strange. I mean, we kind of listen, and yeah, that makes sense. So what's this problem? Why is this a problem for us? Yeah, do you get to that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand these things come about because of causes and conditions. And yeah, they have parts. And yeah, somebody has to think of them as an object and give them a name. So what? Yeah, so what? And then, well, no, well, your ignorance grasps things as existing at the as in the exact opposite way. Well, yeah, but somehow I still see they're dependent. Maybe my ignorance once in a while comes up and I see them as independent, but I understand they're dependent, so what's the problem? So this is the whole thing. We don't understand, like, why ignorance is a problem. First, we don't understand how ignorance grasps the object, you know, as independently existent, and why it's a problem to see things as independently existent. Why is that a problem? Yeah? I've gone through my whole life seeing things as independently existent, you know, and I know they're dependent. Oh, so what? Why is it a problem? Yeah? If you want to talk about the problem, problem's you. Problem's outside of me. It has nothing to do with me. Yeah? Problem is this whole beep, beep, beep world. Not me. Not the way I perceive things. That's not the problem. So you see what the problem is? Yeah? I mean, you can see how ignorant that we are, because we don't even realize that ignorance is our problem. We think the world is our problem and other people are our problem. And that how we perceive things is how they exist out there, independent. Yeah, so this person here, who's just fantastic, wonderful, I don't want to be separated from them ever, 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 is really like that. And 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, that person is so creepy, I don't know how I stayed with them for that long. Not same person, that person's changed, but so have you. But it's mostly our view that's changed. Yeah. But however we see somebody at that moment, we think that's how they've always been. Yeah. Anyway, you know, if we just look at our lives a little bit more, we can see how our ignorance makes us misperceive things, and it lies behind the attachment, the aversion, the jealousy, the arrogance, the laziness, and all these things, and then how those mental states really make us unhappy. Okay. So if things were inherently existent, then meditation on emptiness would not be an antidote to self-grasping, and then we could never eliminate the afflictions at all. Okay? So if the way ignorance perceived things were true, there would be no way to eliminate the afflictions. And I think that's why sometimes people fall into this depressed state of desperation of, you know, well, I'm just an angry person and there's no way for me to get rid of my anger. Yeah, this kind of self-critical mind, I'm just a this kind of person and there's no way I can change. Yeah, and that's grasping at inherent existence. Yeah, and that's putting ourselves in a box. Okay, 185. While attached to your own position and disliking others' positions, you will not approach nirvana. Both kinds of conduct will not bring peace. So this is about giving up strong attachment to your own position. Okay, so first you're attached to the view that the doctrine of emptiness, which eliminates samsara, is supreme, and that other doctrines are wrong. So when you're attached to that view, then you're grasping at true existence. You can't gain liberation. So that's what it means by it. While attached to your own position and disliking others' positions, you will not approach nirvana. Okay? So strong, and when it talks about both kinds of conduct will not bring peace, it means strong attachment to your view and antagonism towards everybody else's view. So when you're like that, then it indicates that you have some self-grasping in there. Yeah? You might even have the right view, but you're real attached to it, and you're very critical of other people who don't have it. And, you know, those people are just so stupid, and they're wrong. They should be like me. Okay? Okay, so don't be attached to the doctrine of emptiness. Then, 186 is about advice to strive for liberation, and that with effort, liberation is easy. Okay? So, Joe Blow says, we can't attain nirvana because it's very difficult to do so, but we can enter samsara because it's easy to do without effort.
Yeah.
He's right, isn't it? Oh, I can't attain nirvana. It's so difficult. I can't put all that salt on my food. I can't eat so much sweet stuff. I have to make my bed. Oh, the sacrifice to get to nirvana. Okay. But samsara is very easy. Yeah, I like that. I'll put salt, put sugar, don't make my bed, let other people shovel the path. Sounds good. You like that, huh? They can answer the phone too. They can answer the email. Yeah. Yeah. They can vacuum the floor. Yeah. Let's let all these compassionate people, you know. Yeah, they can vacuum, sweep everything. Okay, so Aryadeva says, not acting brings about nirvana. Acting, again, brings worldly existence. Thus, without complication, nirvana is easy to attain, but not the latter. Okay, she goes, not acting brings about nirvana. Good, where's my bed? I don't have to act, I'm just going to bed, folks. Bye! I can sleep as long as I want. Don't interrupt me. I don't want to hear anything from you. Stay out of here. And Aryadeva said so. Okay. So, but then the commentary comes. Not acting doesn't mean not doing anything. Ah, shucks. Okay. But it means giving up polluted, virtuous, and non-virtuous actions that produce cyclic existence. So it means not, when it's talking about not acting, it means not doing actions under the influence of grasping at true existence. Okay? Not doing actions, you know, out of attachment, out of hatred, out of, you know, all this kind of stuff that is based on ignorance. Okay, so that's what not acting means. Okay, so understand that not doing truly existence actions, be they virtuous or non-virtuous, brings about nirvana. Okay, now you're going to say, but wait a minute. I thought I was supposed to create virtuous actions, and now you're telling me not to do virtuous actions, that all my virtuous actions are to be given up. You're contradicting yourself. That's what we're going to say, right? No. What? When you're on the initial level of the path, you want to create virtuous actions, even if they are done under the influence of ignorance and self-grasping, because they're still virtuous and they will produce a good rebirth. But as long as you're grasping at true existence, that virtue is not going to lead directly to liberation. It's only going to get you as far as a good rebirth. Okay? To get to liberation, we have to give up any kind of actions at all that are done that are polluted by ignorance, even virtuous actions. Okay? So, you know, different things. We're instructed to do different things at different levels of the path. At the beginning, yeah, do virtuous actions. Doesn't matter that there's self-grasping involved. Just do them, you know, so that you don't get born in a lower realm. Yeah. So you hear about generosity, for example. Nobody even talks about don't grasp at true existence. It's just, you know, be generous, keep ethical conduct. It's good. Yeah. But then when you advance, then they say, no, actually that kind of virtue also has to be given up because it's done under the influence of ignorance. And, you know, in order to attain liberation, we need to have the emptiness that realizes the opposite of what ignorance believes. We need the wisdom that understands that what ignorance is holding doesn't exist. Okay, so ignorance is holding true existence. We need the wisdom that understands that true existence does not exist. Okay, so thus by giving up all actions done under the influence of grasping at true existence, nirvana is easy to attain without complication. Okay? So without complication kind of means without the object of grasping at true existence. Yeah, and get rid of all your complication. Get rid of the truly, you know, the truly existent object that you're grasping at that doesn't really exist as it appears to you. Okay. So, in other words, get rid of the fabrications of true existence. That's what non-action means, okay? So you want to meditate on emptiness and the dependent arising of all of our actions, okay? So whenever we do something, that's why they say, you know, whenever you're generous, don't just, you know, it's good to give, but then reflect on that yourself as the giver is dependent and empty of true existence. The gift that you gave is dependent and empty of true existence. The person you gave it to is dependent and empty. The action of giving is dependent and empty. Yeah? And so your generosity isn't just here. It's the way you think of things when you're giving, that transforms your generosity from being ordinary generosity that's going to bring you an upper rebirth to trying to create the path that is eventually going to realize emptiness directly so that you can actually attain liberation. Okay, following what I'm saying? So always, you know, at the end of the day, when we dedicate our merit, you know, this merit is dependent. It's not some independent kind of merit. Okay, how much merit did I get today? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 brownie points. 8, 9, 10 brownie points. Oh, they said I can't count merit. I want something countable, you know. If I'm going to dedicate my merit, at least it's got to be truly existent merit. I want to know how much I got, because I worked really hard on that cushion today.
4 times,
probably. And four times saying Vajrasattva mantra. Yeah, in all those sessions, I did 4, and I was actually concentrated during them. The rest of them? Oh, well, I don't know. Yeah?
So, the person who's realized emptiness would still be generous. They just would do it without grasping.
Right. A person who's realized emptiness, of course, you know, they're going to be generous. And generosity is going to be very easy for them because they're not grasping onto an inherently existent me who has to be protected at all costs, you know. Because, you know, you can see how the ignorance prevents us from being generous. There's a real me. I've got to be protected. You know, so I can't give this away, and I can't give this away, and I can't give this paper clip. No, can't give that either. Especially if it's one of the ones that are plastic, that are colored. Those are really cool. If I really have to give a paper clip, you can have the metal one. But I really like the plastic ones. Yeah, the pink ones, they're cool, aren't they? I like the white ones, too. That powdered blue isn't bad. Yeah. So if I have to give everything. Okay. So, you know, somebody who's perceiving emptiness, they're not going to have, there's not this feeling of an I that needs to be protected. And they're not imputing so much value onto a paperclip. You know? Whereas with a poverty mind, it's like, I can't give you this paperclip because I might need it someday to put a sheet of two pieces of paper together. Or maybe I need it to comb my hair. Oh, instead of a barrette. Yeah, I can put a paperclip by somebody's table to remind them to cut their hair. I can use it as a thing. You did that one time in a skit, remember? You made some jewelry out of paper clips. It looked kind of cool. And I can use it to, you know, if something's jammed, open up a bottle top, you know, something. This is a precious paperclip. And if you lived in India in the 1970s, you didn't give it to anybody. So you might never get another one. Yeah? So somebody who's realized emptiness does not have this problem. Hmm? Yeah, and to them, that, you know, $1 million and the paperclip are all kind of the same. Yeah, at the end of the day. Yeah, neither of them have any intrinsic value and or any intrinsic worth. Yeah, they only have value and worth depending on how we see them and how we use them. Maybe you can paperclip your $100 bills together so they don't fly away. Okay, so, but the pleasures, but thus without complication, nirvana is easy to attain, but not the latter, in other words, samsara. Okay, but the pleasures, and so then the commentary continues, the pleasures of samsara are not easy to gain, therefore the wise don't strive for samsara, which is acquired through all kinds of exhausting actions, and they don't give up striving for nirvana, which is attained without tiring exertion. We kind of see it as the opposite, don't we? Nirvana, samsara is attained so easily, all I have to do is complain enough so that these people are unhappy, and then they'll give me what I want. That's not too hard. Nirvana? Oh, God. Aching knees, aching back. Yeah, people telling me what to do, what I can't do. I got to look at my mind. Yeah. Okay, so, but actually, samsaric work never ends. Yeah, the more email you send, the more you get. You know, you think, okay, I'm just going to answer this, get rid of the, you know, make my inbox empty? Yeah, about that. Like, get the inbox empty, answer all these things, send them out. It lasts for 30 seconds. Because as soon as you send them out, they start sending you more things. You know? So samsaric work never ends. You build one building, then you have to build another building. You have to build another, then you have to build another one. Yeah? So since samsaric work never ends, and that's why they're saying just give up trying to have samsaric happiness, because you're never going to get it. You know, it's a futile attempt to arrange our duckies in an order. You know what duckies are? No. Oh, okay, yeah. No. Yeah, yeah, you looked up, I knew, okay. This is do you know what duckies are? Yeah, you know what duckies are. I don't know. Duckies, when we're little kids, maybe in Mexico and Germany too, you know, do you have like these little plastic ducks? You know, they're usually like little, you know, duckies, yeah.
Like a little toy.
Yeah, quack, quack. But it's a toy. Like a little yellow rubber or plastic duck. So we call those duckies.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So remember when you're a little kid and you try to line up all your duckies in a line? Yeah, inside the bathtub? Yeah. But then they all get out of line. So then you kind of... You know, it's a futile attempt because every time you move, your hand creates waves, which moves the duckies. But you still try and move them back where they were and get them to stay. You know? So to try and get our duckies all lined up so everything's exactly the way we want it and everybody does exactly what we want them to do when we want them to do it is futile. You know, that's never going to be it's never going to happen. So, like, give up. Yeah. Last night, I had a dream. I think it was because you were talking yesterday about putting things down, putting loads down. So I had a dream of this really nice, this neat kind of, what do you call it, trolley. You know, like the big ones that we use for the refrigerator and the freezer and everything. And you have this big trolley, and you just press one little thing, and the bottom thing goes plop, and the whole thing falls down. That's kind of cool. Yeah. I mean, your refrigerator may fall over, but you know, that's, it doesn't, my point, the point in my dream was, it doesn't take that much to put things down. And it takes a lot of energy to carry them around with you. Yeah. You just press that button and the, you know, the bottom part of your trolley just goes clunk. Clunk. Yeah. So that's what he's saying here. That's what he's saying. Okay, 187 is how can anyone who has no aversion to this take an interest in pacification? Pacification is a synonym of nirvana. Like leaving home, it is also hard to leave worldly existence behind. So this is about the impossibility of attaining liberation without cultivating aversion to samsara. So Joe Blow, bless his heart, based on the previous verse, said, if not doing any action at all in the context of ultimate existence brings about nirvana, why are impermanence, dukkha, etc. taught in this treatise? Dukkha is what's commonly translated as suffering, but it means unsatisfactory conditions. So why, you know, if not doing any action, and, you know, with grasping at ultimate existence is the solution, why do we have to learn about impermanence, dukkha, yeah, equanimity, precious human life, you know, just teach me emptiness, yeah, get to the point. And, you know, we're lazy. It's like, I don't want to hear all this other stuff. If all I need to do is realize emptiness, then teach me emptiness. I paid my money, give me the teaching. You know, I'm a good consumer. Yeah, look, I put that money in the Donna basket there. So, you know, you better give me this teaching. And I don't want that teaching. I don't want to hear about the disadvantages of cyclic existence. Because cyclic existence is pretty nice. But, you know, I do want to end my suffering. But, you know, let's have some samsara, nice part of samsara, some nirvana at the same time. Yeah? Right?
Winter home in Hawaii.
Huh?
It's like a winter home in Hawaii.
Yeah, like, yeah, exactly. Your winter home in Hawaii. That's what I want. My winter home where I can go skiing in Hawaii. Yes. Okay. So, how can no one who has no aversion to this take an interest in pacification? In other words, if we have no aversion to samsara, we're not going to be interested in attaining nirvana. If you live in a prison and you think your prison is kind of nice, you're not going to try and get out. You're not going to try and, you know, file an appeal or, you know, get out somehow. You're just going to decorate your cell. Yeah, not too bad in this prison cell. Kind of nice, actually. Yeah, I mean, if I paint the bars so they aren't all black, you know, pink, blue, white, purple, rainbow-colored bars. Yeah, that's nice. I like living here. Yeah? Okay? So that's what we're like. Okay, so to produce aversion to samsara so that we will attain nirvana free from samsaric activities. That's what we have to do. If we don't have aversion, we won't have any interest in liberation. Okay? Liberation is the pacification of the first two noble truths, dukkha and its origin. If you don't suffer from thirst, you won't feel a strong urge to drink to relieve the discomfort. Yeah? Your home may contain little of worth, but you still can't give up attachment to it. Yeah? When it says, like, leaving home, yeah? It is also hard to leave worldly existence behind. Yeah. So worldly existence does not have much of any value in it, but we really don't want to leave. Kind of nice. All my friends are here. If I attain nirvana, I won't be able to hang out with all you guys. Yeah? I'm going to have to give up my friends. I'm going to have to give up my family, my parents, my children, my job, all my awards, all my certificates. Yeah? So I don't want to leave all of that. Yeah? So that's why it says, your home may contain little of worth, but you still can't give up attachment to it. Yeah? And we're kind of like that, you know? Our home may not contain much of worth, but we think it's really... Yeah, have you ever noticed when you, if you try and buy land or a house or something, the other people are always charging so much. And it's not worth what they're charging. But when you tell them, they get really mad. Yeah? Because they think it really is worth that much. Yeah? Look at this beautiful cabinetry. You know, it's been here for 50 years. Yeah? I was grew up in this house with this beautiful cabinetry. It belonged to my grandmother and my mother. It has so many sentimental value. I don't want to give it up. You know, it's like all beat up and filthy. Yeah. But you think it's so precious. Yeah? I don't want to give it up. You know, this rug. Oh, these pot holders. I made them when I was a little kid. Do you remember those little pot holder kits with the thing? Where you weave it out, you know, you put it on a loom, do you remember that? And you weave it in and out, and you get... I made these pot holders when I was 5 years old. It's like, they're very precious. Yeah. I know they're at a flea market, but they don't have fleas. They're worth $100 each. You know, it's like, give me a break. Okay? So, you know, this is how we look at the samsara. You know, it's like, whatever is I, me, my, mine, is like so valuable, I can't give it up. Sometimes, you know, we come to the Abbey, and we move to the Abbey, and we bring with some stuff from our place, and it's like, and then it becomes communal property. But it becomes communal property after we keep it in our room for a few years. Yeah, it's communal property, and it still happens to be in my room. Yeah. And then, you know, we do this thing of every year you have to change rooms, and you're supposed to leave everything behind except, you know, your clothes and your book. And you try and find some way where, you know, this rug, you know, or these sheets, or this, you know, lampshade just got accidentally mixed in with my clothes and came to the next room with me. Because I've had it since I was a child. Yeah? And then you leave it, and, you know, I mean, finally when you leave it and it's in somebody else's room, you know, take care of it properly. Yeah? This possession, you know, which is really from my house. Look, did you know that the blanket, you know, that the kitties sleep on, the white one with the little yellow flowers with the green leaves? I had that when I was a little girl. Yeah, that was one of my blankies, and my mother gave it to the Abbey. and now it got cut up. Of course, I was the one who said so, but it doesn't matter. You know? And like some of those pieces of my blankie are used as rags. Oh! Oh. Yeah? So when you use that, you better really think of my home and when I was a little girl and the kindness of my mother and all those things, you know?
Do they have a K or a T on them?
Do they have a K or a T on them?
She's like, or a wavy line.
What's the wavy line? I haven't seen those.
I can't remember the bathroom countertop.
Maybe
it's for the toilet.
Oh,
no, 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 no.
For the toilet. You're using my blankie for the toilet. The cats can lie on it. That's okay. Yeah. Okay. So, similarly, it's difficult for those of low intelligence to leave samsara behind because they're bound by attachment, like someone who is about to be killed but who hasn't stopped craving and still wants a good meal. That's one of the most ridiculous, to me, totally repulsive things about our penal system is that if you're on death row, they won't let you see your family. They won't let you do anything. Yeah, you have all this crummy food. And then, the week before they die, your family can come in, you can call them, instead of, and you can even sit in the same room with your family, and then when you're about to get executed, your last meal, you can order and tell them what you want. I want filet mignon, I want lobster, and they'll give it to you. Your last meal, you know, before they execute you, you can order and they'll give you exactly what you want. Disgusting or not disgusting? Anyway, this is what they say that we're like. We're bound by attachment, like somebody who's about to be killed, you know, but is still craving and wants a good meal. So here we are in samsara, you know, living on the edge where the Lord of, you know, death any moment, you know, we can die and there we go. And it's still, but, you know, I want my chocolate chip cookies. Yeah. I want my Nutella. I want my potato chips. Yeah, that's what we're like. Yeah. I want my way. Okay, so, you know, it's kind of, when you look at that, you know, when you can get a vision of what samsara is, then we really can, we have to have compassion for sentient beings, for how completely blind we are to the whole situation we're in, and how we act in such a completely counterproductive, ridiculous way, you know, creating the cause for suffering and giving up the cause of happiness instead of the other way around. Mm-hmm. So it's a reason for compassion, and it's a reason to develop renunciation and the determination to be free from samsara. Because without seeing what samsara is really like and how foolish we are to crave it, we're not going to want to attain liberation, let alone full awakening. Yeah. So that's why we meditate on impermanence and dukkha in response to what Joe Blow was asking. Why do we have to think about this? Because thinking about it will generate within us the motivation to get out of cyclic existence. Okay. We're going very slow these days, aren't we? Anyway, do you have questions?
I have a quick one.
Yeah.
So this kind of virtue that isn't contaminated anymore would only start happening once we're at the path of seeing.
Yeah, yeah.
But even now in our own little attempts to, mm-hmm. you know, generate this kind of attitude of seeing things as dependent, is that going to sort of polish up the this virtue a little?
Right. So we'll only be able to start creating the unpolluted karma at the path of seeing. But how do we get to the path of seeing? By first creating polluted virtue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So also, if we keep trying to think, even at my little level.
Right, exactly. Even at our little level. Like, it's not going to be that one day we're going to wake up and realize emptiness. Mm-hmm. It's we have to create the cause to realize emptiness. So how do we do that? We think about dependent arising as much as possible and then relate dependent arising to emptiness. So when we give or when we dedicate our virtue or when we do any number of things to really think, oh, this is something dependent. Myself, you know, as the agent, the whatever I'm doing, whatever I'm handling, whoever that I'm working with, all these things are dependent on each other. None of them exist inherently. Then just thinking like that is putting the imprint in our own mind. Eventually, to be able to use dependent arising as the reason to understand emptiness. Mm-hmm.
Why is it so easy for us to understand when we think about it that things are dependent on causes and so forth, but it's so difficult to recognize that ignorance is grasping things as being independent?
Yeah. So why is it so easy to recognize things are dependent when we think about it, but so difficult to really see that most of the time we're grasping at things as independent? This is, again, just by the force of ignorance. You know, we're so ignorant that we don't realize how ignorant we are. Yeah. It's like somebody who's so sick that they can't think straight, so they don't realize how sick they are. You know how sometimes you get really sick, so you can't think clearly, so you don't understand how sick you are, so you don't take good care of yourself? So it's like that. Like that. So, you know, we're just trying to get ourselves to go, oh, wait a minute, I'm sick. You know, I'm sick in samsara. What I'm perceiving is under the influence of ignorance, or oh, why am I unhappy? Oh, that's because afflictions are in the mind. It's not because of the other person. It's because my afflictions are manifest. That's why I'm unhappy. Mm-hmm. Yeah?
And I think it's amazing to see how weak the wisdom mind still is in meditation.
How weak the wisdom mind is.
It doesn't even get to the level that we're talking about. Like an affliction arises and I might say to myself, this is an appearance of this life, just of this life. And then it's like, no! This person did XXXXX.
Yeah.
The wisdom mind gets like, but 2 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you even hold that thought?
Yeah. Right. So you're saying even in meditation, some anger may come up and you go, oh, this is anger, it's an affliction. And then your mind instantly responds, but they did this and they did that, and I really have to take care of this because otherwise they're going to push me around for the next 3 great eons. You know? And so that wisdom mind is like, yeah, remember that verse in Shantideva's text, you know?
I was talking about that in the circle yesterday, about the feeble, the virtuous mind.
Yeah, the virtuous mind is very feeble. You know, and our precious human life like a flash of lightning in the night. So.
The vice is very strong.
Huh?
Also, the vice is very strong.
Yeah,
the force of our destructive ways.
Yeah, our habits towards non-virtue are like.
So what force can overcome this?
Yeah.
That's where it goes.
Yes, what force can overcome this? And Shantideva's answer?
Bodhicitta.
Bodhicitta. Yeah. So that's why we have to practice bodhicitta. And even we're generating it and it's fabricated bodhicitta, that's still good, you know, just by doing, you know, all these things, just doing them even intellectually, even fabricated. It's putting that imprint in the mind. You know, how are we going to get to spontaneous if we don't do it over and over and over again with effort first? Yeah, it's like, how do you learn to type fast? Practice.
May the spiritual teacher soon lead me on the sacred path, and all spiritual friends who practice it have long life. May I pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances, grant such inspiration, I pray. May the lives of the venerable spiritual mentors be stable, and their virtuous actions spread in the 10 directions. May the light of Losong's teachings dispelling the darkness of the beings in the three worlds always increase. Om Guru Namandala Kamiryatayami. Due to this merit, may we soon attain the awakened state of Vajrasattva, that we may be able to liberate all sentient beings from their suffering. May the precious Bodhi mind not yet born arise and grow. May that born have no decline, but increase forevermore. In the snowy mountain pure land, you're the source of good and happiness. Powerful tents and gas of chimney, may we stay until samsara ends. May the deeds of explaining and practicing the Dharma done by groups supporting the teachings and their upholders, who spread the view of dependent arising and nonviolent actions in the 10 directions, and especially Ashravastiyami in the West Forest.